Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, April 30th, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for tuning in. On today's show, Juno Jazz and Classics, we'll preview live music, cruises, free concerts, jams, workshops, and more. Learn how to see the movie Irreparable Harm, a film that focuses on Admiralty Island, the people of Angoon, and Greens Creek Mine. Meet a former Iraqi ambassador to the USA, and we'll check out the art of Louise Miller. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon, currently 43 degrees with light rain here in the capital city.
This is national native news. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Treaty of Fort Laramie, signed 150 years ago, was commemorated over the weekend. South Dakota tribal members were among those who gathered at the site in Wyoming. Lee Strubinger has more.
The 1868 Treaty of Fort Laramie guaranteed a large swath of land from Nebraska to Montana, which included the Black Hills and the east bank of the Missouri River. Eventually, the established treaty area got whittled down to modern-day reservations. The 150 years between the treaty signing and today include events like the 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre. Faith Spotted Eagle is Ihonctowan Dakota from the Yankton Reservation. She says the commemoration is bittersweet.
Some leaders were hesitant to come because there are people who were non-treaty signers from certain families. It's not a celebration. It's a very large time in history where we were against the wall, our children are dying, our language is outlawed, but it was just the onslaught of settlers coming into our territory. It was actually during the Indian Wars, and so I know that a lot of our leaders were backed against the wall.
Claude Two Elk is Sichangu Lakota from the Rosebud Reservation. He's a member of the Treaty Council.
Historical trauma has created a lot of our behavior of our people, and a lot of our people is not aware of what the trauma has done to the spirit of our people. One of the reasons why I'm here to help all of our nations to become aware of the past and to go through that healing process of knowing who we are and become more involved with our treaties.
Tribes still use the treaty for education and healthcare funding, as well as rights as sovereign nations. The commemoration was 2 years in the making. National Park Service officials say they're continuing that dialogue between the park and tribes to permanently incorporate tribal perspectives in the telling of the historical site. I'm Lee Strubinger in Fort Laramie, Wyoming.
A group of 10 U.S. senators sent a letter Friday to the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. The senators, including Vice Chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee, Tom Udall, are concerned the agency has expressed views which they say challenge the unique legal status and protections of tribes. At issue is the administration's view over Medicaid work requirement exemptions for tribes, which health officials state could not be granted because they would be race-based. The letter states the views fail to recognize the legal status of tribes and tribal members under federal law, the Constitution, treaties, and the federal trust relationship. The senators are asking for clarification and say Medicaid and Medicare programs are essential to fulfilling trust and treaty obligations to tribes. Concerns are being raised as states are planning to implement new Medicaid work requirements. Taylor Susan from the White Mountain Apache and Walker River Paiute tribes was crowned as the 2018 Miss Indian World on Saturday at the Gathering of Nations powwow in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She was among 30 Native women from tribes across the U.S. and Canada vying for the title. Taylor is currently a student at the University of Arizona. The 25-year-old will serve as a cultural ambassador for the year. Former chairman of the Cabazon Band of Mission Indians, John James, is being remembered for his work in Indian gaming. A press release states James recently passed away peacefully among family and friends. He was known as the father of Native American gaming. He established bingo and poker at the California tribe and guided the tribe through court in a landmark case which affirmed gaming rights on tribal lands. It helped create the Indian gaming industry across the country. James was a Korean War veteran and served as chairman of the tribe for more than 20 years. He was 87 years old at the time of his death. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com. Support by AARP, creating and connecting you to unique tools and content like Native Origins, incorporating Native American culture with recipes inspired by indigenous foods. More at AARP.org/Native Origins.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, April 30th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. Joining me in the studio now are Will Ransom, the artistic director of Juno Jazz and Classics, and Reggie Schapp, the executive director. And we're here to talk about this year's festival, which kicks off this Friday. Will, Reggie, thanks for coming in and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great to be back in Juno.
It's nice to have you here. Beautiful. We brought out some beautiful weather here for you to welcome you back. Looks good by Friday, though. How's this whole thing kick off?
We are so thrilled to be back for our 32nd season, and once again, we're going to be mixing blues and jazz and classical music throughout 16 incredible days, with stuff happening all day, pretty much on every day. A lot of it free. And a lot of it fun. All of it fun.
How many days did you say?
16 days.
And about how many musicians would you say, Reggie, are involved?
There's 35 musicians this year involved.
35 musicians. And I suspect you've been in charge of finding them accommodations and entertainment. And
airline tickets. They're all flying from everywhere, all over the United States. So it's going to be a wonderful mix of people.
35 musicians. Wow. I bet you're excited about all of them. Tell us about a few highlights from the festival.
Well, some of the highlights are new artists for the festival this year. We're kicking off with a really fun Texas blues band called the Andrew Jr. Boy Jones Blues Band with Carrie LaPie, singer. And that's going to be both a concert and a dance party as well. So there'll be plenty of chairs if people want to sit down and listen. But there'll be a great big wooden floor for dancing as well, for anybody who feels moved. And I think once you hear him, you're going to feel like dancing as well.
I have him queued up for just after our interview. That'll be this Friday at Centennial Hall, right?
That's right. That's our kickoff.
Okay.
Yep. And then we have our popular blues cruises that are going to happen on Saturday. Or Blues Cruise this year. We're just offering one. And so get your tickets soon, because it'll probably sell out. And we'll have the Junior Boy Jones band on that as well. And we're offering this year a classical cruise that we haven't done in a number of years. And going to have some fun with that, calling it Mozart's Eine kleine Jagdmusik, rather than Nachtmusik, with a wonderful string quartet playing the Mozart Little Night Music on that classical cruise on Saturday.
Okay, so those are both ticketed events, Friday night at Centennial Hall, and then the Blues Cruise and the Classical Cruise. I notice a free event sort of sandwiched in between the cruises.
Is that our Heritage Cafe Concert?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're trying two this year, cafe concerts at Heritage Coffee right in downtown Juneau. You can stop by and have a nice something hot in this cold and wet weather, or have a snack and listen to informal music played by some wonderful string players. You can hang out and talk with the musicians in between pieces as well. Very informal and very fun.
I love that you all provide free concerts for the community. It's great. And I'm sure we're going to talk about some of the ones, brown bag lunches at the state office building as well.
Right. And in fact, our formal concert series that are ticketed are kind of the tip of the iceberg of what we do, and obviously the most visible. But a huge part of what Juno Jazz and Classics is education. And we take every one of our musicians who comes in, almost everyone, out to the schools and work with everyone from little kids in elementary school all the way through high school kids. We go to retirement centers as well and have performances there. We're really all over the community.
Yeah, for 32 years, right?
No, that's right, yeah.
All right, what else are you looking forward to, Reggie?
Well, I'm really looking forward to this year. A new venue for us. We're going to be in the Walter Soboloff Building Clan House for a concert called Music of Many Cultures. The Vega String Quartet is coming back, and we'll be playing there. There'll be music from Hungarian folk dances to John Luther Adams, some of his Alaska music. You know, he is one of our Alaskan composers, so it's going to be a wonderful experience. And I cannot wait to hear the strings just resound in that beautiful wood room.
Yeah,
it should be something else, yes.
How about you, Will? What else are you looking forward to?
Well, a couple of our classical artists are really exciting. I'm so delighted to bring them here and share them with the Juneau audiences. The Eroica Piano Trio is the most sought-after piano trio in the world, and they are three extraordinary young women who are some of the top players in the world and have been having a major career for almost 30 years now, I think. They started young. And they're going to be here and really wow us with a couple of programs. And another highlight for me is having Richard Stoltzman, who's a true legend in both the classical but also the jazz and pop class crossover world as well. Multiple Grammy Award winner and just really extraordinary player and personality on stage. And his new wife, Mika Stoltzman, is a jazz marimba player. And if you've never experienced the sound of a huge five-octave wooden marimba, you're in for a real treat, and nobody does it better than Mika.
And you're a piano player yourself. Do we get to hear you in
Absolutely.
The next couple
yeah.
weeks?
I'll be on stage for a number of these concerts, often in a supporting role and filling in when we need an extra piano player for certain pieces. But I'm looking forward to sharing my music with everybody, too.
Excellent. What would you say are some tickets that people should be getting right away, Reggie?
Besides the cruises, Strings at the Shrine is always a good hard ticket to get. So the 4 o'clock's almost sold out, but there's still plenty of tickets for the 6:30. And then the Putting on the Ritz is about two-thirds of the way sold out right now. That is our Jazz Meets Classics out at UAS, and it's a wonderful, fun cabaret evening. And then the Music of Many Cultures. The Clan House is pretty intimate, so it's only going to have about 75. I think there's only like 15 tickets left.
Okay.
So they're going fast.
And there are too many concerts to list here on a Juneau afternoon today. Where can people see all of these?
On our website, jazzandclassics.org. And if you have any questions, you can call it at the office. It's 463-3378.
Or you can drop by the Jack and get our beautiful brochures.
We have a listener out there who's never gone to Juneau Jazz and Classics before. They just don't quite know how to access it. You give them three things that they should go see this year. One thing even, just to get a taste for what you all do.
I would say go hear the A Night at the Opera without the singers with the Eroica Trio. It's just going to be pure fun. And I would go to, let's see, how about the Doug Deming and the Jewel Tones to get a little bit of rock and roll and jazz and great fun, dancing if you like. And come hear our grand finale as well, Rhonda Ross, who's the daughter of Diana Ross and has that same incredible personality and draw that her mother does, but with her own personality.
How about you, Reggie?
I'd say Putting on the Ritz because you get a little bit of jazz, you get a little bit of classic, and it's going to be Songs of Love. Who doesn't love to sit and listen to Songs of Love? So it'll be a wonderful, fun evening.
And, you know, some of the events that I love are the, like I said, the lunches, the free brown bag lunches at the state office building, and watching the musicians interact with the crowd and the kids.
Yeah.
And how much the kids enjoy the music.
They do, and we'll be having 3 busloads of kids each concert. So the kids will be there, and it's such a wonderful experience.
You don't have to manage them, do you?
Not manage them, but I had to get the PK has to get all the buses to get them there and get it organized. So
okay. To see this whole schedule, what's the website one more time, please?
Jazzandclassics.org.
And tickets? So you can get links
tickets
to tickets there.
On the website, but also at the Jack and Hearthside Books.
All right, so we're going to go out here with Andrew Jr. Boyd Jones. He plays this Friday night at Centennial Hall. Doors open probably 6:30.
Yep, exactly, 6:30.
All right, what should we listen for in Andrew Jr. Boyd Jones' music here?
Oh, I'm not sure what track you're going to play, but just amazing guitar playing and real solid blues.
All right, thanks, you too. We'll see you Friday night.
See you Friday.
Thanks.
up and thrown. When I first laid eyes on you and you first laid eyes on me, I knew there was something between us more than the eyes could see. We meet up at our place where no one would ever know. When it's time to leave, I don't want you to go, younger woman. Even though I'm an older man, I feel like nothing's wrong.
By popular demand, Juno Jazz and Classics brings back the classical cruise May 5th, leaving Off Bay at noon with Grammy winners Sarah Santambrogio, Luke Fleming, and Kate Ransom. May 8th, it's the Eroica Trio and William Ransom for pizza, pasta, and puccini, along with a night at the opera without singers. On May 10th, Eroica Plus. The trio is joined by Kate Ransom and Luke Fleming to bring music of Bach, Schumann, and Dvorak to life. Classical music, incredible musicians. Tickets at the Jack, Hearthside, and jazzandclassics.org.
The station is supported by Breezen, carrying a variety of sandwiches, fresh baked bread, and pastries. Chef Moorhead offers daily changing menu choices for takeout and catering for special events and parties. More information at Breezen.com.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, April 30th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Here in the studio now is Heather Evoy. She's the Indigenous Outreach Coordinator for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. Welcome to the show, Heather.
Hi, thanks. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here, too. So Irreparable Harm is a film that was made right over here on Admiralty Island. Tell us about it. It's going to be playing this week, right, at the Gold Town?
That is correct. That's Wednesday night at 6 o'clock at the Gold Town, and will be our second Juno film viewing. I think we did another one back in March, and we had quite a bit of interest to show it again, and so
Can you give us the quick radio trailer for what the film's like?
Radio trailer, let's see. So it is a film focusing in Hawk Inlet, which is on Admiralty Island, Admiralty National Monument. And the film really highlights the community of Angoon and the resources that they harvest off the land, seal, cockles, everything, and the ecosystem there in Greens Creek.
Okay, and how long is the film, and when did it come out?
It is about 20 minutes runtime, and I believe it just came out, I want to say right around the holidays. We started showing it in January. We started off with an initial screening in the community of Angoon, since it's their film, that we thought that was appropriate.
Okay, and who were the partners that went into making the film?
That was Colin and Connor. I forget their last names. I apologize. And that was part of the Wild and Scenic Films series, I believe.
All right, and is SEAC also involved with the production of the movie?
We were, yes. We were partners. Yep.
Okay. What is your favorite part, would you say, of the movie?
Well, we have our wonderful local elder, David Katzik, in the film, and as many people around here know him, he's just a really wonderful, wonderful voice. So I think it's great to hear him. But in all honesty, my favorite part of the film was showing it in Angoon. It was just so wonderful to show to the school kids and see their reactions to seeing themselves and, you know, their aunties and uncles and grandparents on the film. It was really great. Even the town dog made it into the film, so.
All right. So what is Wednesday night going to look like? Is there going to be a talk before or after?
We'll do a brief introduction. I think the doors open at 5:30, showing at 6. And Guy Archibald, our staff scientist, will be there to do a brief Q&A afterwards. And I'm not sure, we have also in the film is Joe Zuboff. I'm not sure if David and Joe will be joining us. Just a little Q&A afterwards.
What does SEAC hope comes from this film?
Well, the big push with the film is to repeat the baseline studies out at Hawk Inlet, and that would be the Forest Service. The last studies were conducted before the mine was in production out there, I want to say in 1980, 81, and there haven't been baseline studies repeated since. And so we're using this film to just kind of help to get the word out and help push for that. There's a tailings expansion that Greens Creek has applied for this year, and we would really like to see those baselines repeated before the tailings expansion is granted.
Okay. Irreparable Harm is playing this Wednesday, 6 p.m. at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater downtown, right?
Yep.
6 p.m.
Please come down and join us.
If people want more information about the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, am I saying that right?
Yep.
Where can they go?
SEAC.org.
Okay. Anything else that you would like to share, Heather?
No.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Have a wonderful afternoon.
this is Bird Note. Almost anywhere in North America, you can hear the piercing scream of a red-tailed hawk. They're right at home in a wide variety of natural landscapes, from meadows to forest edges, deserts, and canyons. They're present all year round, bulky silhouettes perched along the roadside or soaring above on broad, rounded wings with a 4-foot span. One big reason we see red-tailed hawks in so many places is their remarkable adaptability as hunters. They vary their diet to what is locally abundant. So over long fields or along the edge of highways, red-tailed hawks eat mostly small mammals such as rabbits, voles, and mice, with the occasional bird thrown in. In more arid regions, where voles may be few but reptiles abound, these opportunistic hawks pounce on snakes. In parts of the southwestern United States, where vast numbers of bats emerge from roost caves after sunset, red-tails will snatch them in midair. They find an even more unlikely entree on Socorro Island, Mexico, where land crabs are their primary prey. Versatility serves the red tail well. As much as any species of raptor, it may be able to adapt to shifts in food sources as human activity changes the landscape around it. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note comes from Audubon Park Wild Bird Food, welcoming the return of songbirds with full feeders. Spring bird feeding tips at audubonpark.com.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 30th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. We're right at the bottom of the hour. Joining me in the studio now is a former Iraqi ambassador to the USA, Luqman Faley. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
And also Carl Broderson, the current board president of the Juno World Affairs Council. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Hello, thank you.
All right. So 5 o'clock tonight, this event is downstairs here at 360. Is that right?
Yep.
All right. Give us the quick elevator talk on the Juno World Affairs Council.
Very quick and succinctly and completely from memory, the Juno World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization whose mission is to encourage dialogue and understanding of important international, economic, political, and social issues by bringing experts to Juno to tell us what they know about the globe, bringing the world to Juno.
You really have that one down.
Perfect from memory every time.
And how did you get introduced to the former Iraqi ambassador, Luqman?
We met him through the Alaska World Affairs Council up in Anchorage.
Okay. Sir, welcome to the show. It's nice
Thank
to have you,
for
you
having
on
me again here.
You've been on quite a tour, I understand.
I have been to Oregon, Anchorage, going to California after that, and then back to Washington, D.C.
Well, thank you for stopping in the capital city.
My delight.
Okay, so Juno World Affairs Council presentations are usually about an hour long, is that right?
An hour, even less slightly, 55 minutes. Miko Wilson is very particular about the recording lengths because they have to fit on airtime slots.
Mr. Faley, tonight at 5 o'clock, what are you planning on focusing on?
First of all, to say thank you to those Americans who worked hard in development of Iraq. Also to remind the Americans why Iraq is important, away from the war, away from the military aspect of it, trade, commerce, students coming here, and so on. So I would like to give an update, thank the Americans, and then give them an update of where we are. Elections we have next week, talk about that as well.
Can you give us a few snapshots of what Iraq is like right now?
It's transforming significantly from a sense of socio-economics. It has had to go through the troubles you guys have gone through with the oil prices going down, so we are still highly oil dependency. It's going through transforming in relation to democratics. We're going through elections soon. It also, the society is getting more vibrant, but also looks outward. There are much more outward society than before.
Interesting. Yeah, we have that oil in common, don't we, Alaska and Iraq?
It's a blessing and a curse.
Mm-hmm. What has been, and I'm sure there have been many, some of the bigger challenges as your ambassador to the USA from 2013 to 2016?
At that time, there was less engagement with Iraq because of the troop withdrawal, so it was important to remind the people. The U.S. has invested a lot in treasure and blood and sweat, so it's important to say that that investment did not go to waste. The Iraq is still an important country geopolitically in the globe in relation to energy. It's number two in OPEC. It produces 4 million plus barrel a day, so it's still a significant player, global player. So to remind the American that what they invested, they should not abandon Iraq.
And, sir, may I ask what you hope for the future?
I think not just to think about Iraq in an average American mindset, not to think about it just from a security perspective, also for us to have a stronger relationship, more predictable relationship with the U.S., focusing on trades, our students coming over here, you know, healthcare, agriculture, buying American rice, and so on. So we would like to have a normal, healthy, predictable relationship.
Carl, thinking about the format of a JWAC presentation, 55 minutes or just a little less than an hour, is there time for questions? What's it look like?
Absolutely. The last sometimes 10 minutes are for questions because this is a unique opportunity for us to interact with somebody as well as just listen to what they have to say.
What do you look forward to most tonight?
I've been driving around talking about myself and my town for 90% of the time, and I look forward to an opportunity to finally hear the former ambassador's things that he has to say about his home, because I have a hard time not yammering on about glaciers and mountains. So we can even it up
what
a little bit.
What diversity do you have here?
He's been very patient with me. Thank you.
Give us the details again on tonight, please.
That's tonight, 5 o'clock at 360, the K2 studio downstairs, and as always, it's completely free. Just show up and listen.
All right. Ambassador Faley, is there anything I'm missing or anything else that you'd like to communicate to our listeners?
I mean, specifically with Alaska, we have commonalities and a lot of challenges in relation to energy. I would like us to think commonly together at these challenges, how do we get around, lessons learned from each other moving forward, because we're all, at the end of the day, all citizens of this globe.
Indeed. Well, thank you, sir, for your time. Thanks for coming to Juneau. 5 o'clock tonight at 360 here in the KTOO building. Admission is free?
Always.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
JWC.org.
All right. Thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. art glasses, your not-so-typical sip and paint classes, proudly presents a sip and paint class. Join KTOO and the Jack for the final art classes of the season on May 10th, starting at 5:30 p.m. at the Hangar Ballroom. Patty Jopie is our featured artist, and she'll lead an evening of watercolor exploration. Participants will create local scenes on very special watercolor greeting cards. Learn about this wonderful painting medium and go home with a set of original greeting cards. All supplies included, no host bar, tickets at jahc.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 30th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host, about 23 minutes until the top of the hour. And now in the studio is Louise Miller. She has a show that's opening up, an art show, this Friday for First Friday at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Fin, Fur, Feathers, and the Frozen North. Did I get that right, Louise?
You did. Thank you, Scott.
All right. So some people may know you as an art teacher or an oil painter. How do you introduce yourself these days?
Oh, dear. I don't know that I really... I just say hello. I've lived in Juneau since 1975, so I know a lot of faces and a lot of names. And I think maybe mostly the art, the parties have really taken off and have gotten people to recognize my name.
All right, so this show is called Fin, Fur, Feathers, and the Frozen North. Would you say that sort of sums up the kind of paintings that you like to do in oil?
Yes. Well, I like to do portraits as well, but portraits I don't think for an art show because they are specific to commissions. But they needed a title, and I had to somehow get all of what I didn't know how to get it all in there.
It sounds like, you're going to be sharing the space with Amanda Filori, another great painter, right?
Yes.
For this first Friday and, I guess, for the month of May. But you were telling me you have a lot of paintings to choose from. Will you pick one for us, if you will, and describe to our listeners what it is, what it looks like, and what you liked about producing it? Maybe a favorite piece.
Oh, dear. I think, unfortunately, my favorite piece at this moment is a portrait of my granddaughter. But for the show, I think maybe my favorite is a swan that I did, and the lighting in the feathers is, I think, pretty nice. it's striking. It's about 12 by 16, so it's not too big, but I like the way it came out.
And may I ask where you found inspiration for that swan?
Well, that one actually came from an online source. I have a copyright-free source for photos, so that it's really nice. Photographers put up their pictures, and they don't ask for anything other than when you're done, you post your painting on their site. So that's where I got that one from. But because it is not it's not one of the swans that lives in Juneau, although I have done a couple of paintings of those particular swans. This one is a I'm not sure. But it's got a bit of a bulb on the beak, and that's not typical to the one that comes through here.
I wonder if that's a trumpeter.
I'm sure that's what it is.
Yeah. Okay, so 12 by 16. How long does it take you to make a painting like that?
I wish it would take me longer because I have a lot of paintings. since it's oils, it can take a while because, well, if you include the dry time. But I can usually get one done. Of course, I'm no longer working outside the home, so I can spend hours and hours in my studio. So I don't know, maybe 10 to 20 hours. But it's all enjoyable.
Good. You say enjoyable. What is that time like for you?
Well, I have a lovely studio set up in my garage, and that's where we also have the parties. But it's set up, and I have my easel and my lights all set up, and I put on KTOO, and I listen to the radio, and I paint.
Oh, that's great. You mentioned the parties. People may know you in that capacity as well. Explain to our listeners what those are.
We have parties, and it's spelled lowercase p, capital A, capital R, capital T, lowercase y. So it's a party. I have them less often than I did in the beginning, but usually at least twice a month for public parties that are posted online, and anybody can sign up for them. But then that leaves us room for people who want private parties. We had one last week for a hockey team, And so we had a really nice hockey image, and they all painted the same thing and had a lot of fun.
Hockey players in an art studio painting.
Yeah, it was great.
Wow, that sounds like fun. If somebody wants to take one of these classes, how do they learn more about those?
Go to my website, louisemillerfineart.com, and it comes right up to the calendar page, and it'll show what public parties are there, and also a link if you want more information about private parties.
Do you have any public parties coming up in the near future?
There's one in May. It's the middle week of May.
Okay.
And it's a skunk cabbage.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
How to paint skunk cabbage.
Well, how to paint my version of the skunk cabbage. There's a lot of paint and sip parties down south, and they do, you know, if you go online, they're almost always the same images. And I'm sure a lot of them are copyright. I'm real a stickler on copyright now, so we tend to design our own. My daughter and I do a lot of figure that out. And recently we've asked people for their own photos of local scenes that they would like to have a party made of. So we did one of a shrine image, and then another one of Lynn Canal. So we're trying to make them be more local so that they're not your typical paint and sip party, although you can paint and sip.
Back to the hockey players for a minute. Did you have individuals who had never painted before?
Oh, yes. Most of them hadn't. Yeah.
How did you get them started?
Well, I say, we use acrylic, and this is the properties of acrylics, and this is when you're doing a painting, you start at the background, and you work your way forward, and we just work through it.
I imagine you see some transformations during those classes.
I was very impressed by all those hockey players. They all did a really, really good job. We had Northern Lights in the background. It was really a nice picture.
That's great. So your show opens this Friday. Getting back to something you said earlier, one of your favorite pieces right now is a portrait of your granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about portraiture that you like so much?
I struggle real hard. Well, I struggle with it sometimes. Sometimes it just goes. I'm trying to go for photorealism. So I have the photo the same size, and I work in it. And this particular one, I think I did a real good job on it, and I'm real proud of it. It's still in my studio. I haven't given it to them to put in their house yet.
And you do that for the public as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine go to your website if somebody wants a portrait.
Yeah.
Themselves done.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Beyond the Swan, what's another piece we should look for this Friday at the...
I have lots of eagles. I love painting the birds, too. So I've got several eagles. And the Juno Photo Group on Facebook is an amazing group, and they are amazing photographers, and they're very generous. If I see an image there that just speaks to me, if I send them a message asking for permission to paint it, nobody's said, sorry, you can't. So they're really good about that. So I've got several from Lance Nesbitt and Kari Monagle and Gina Vos, several. That their pictures just really, I really like the layout, the image of it, and I just wanted to paint it. So they gave me permission, so I've got several from them.
How did you become a painter?
You know, I've been an art person all my life. It's pretty much how I got through school. I was not an academic. I spent most of my time in the art room or the music room, and that's how I got my way out. And I just love it. I mean, it's my creative spot, and I just really enjoy it.
Okay. We've been speaking with Louise Miller. She will be showing art starting this Friday for the month of May at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. First Friday seems to usually start around 4 o'clock.
4:30, I believe.
4:30 at the Jack here in the Willoughby Arts District. You can find more information at louisemiller.com.
Louise Miller Fine Art.
FineArt.com. Thank you. Finn, fur, feathers in the frozen north. It's been great talking to you, Louise. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's it. Thanks so much, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cruise for a cause on Wednesday, May 2nd, and set sail to Orca Point Lodge with the United Way of Southeast Alaska. With guest of honor, Brian Weed, Alaskan explorer and lead of Juneau's Hidden History Group, who will be sharing the local legend, the Lost Rocker Mine, while guests enjoy a delicious meal provided by Allen Marine. The cruise departs promptly at 5:30 p.m. from Stouter Harbor and Off Bay aboard Allen Marine. Join the United Way for this relaxing, enjoyable event. Proceeds benefit the United Way of Southeast Alaska. Tickets are available at unitedwayseak.org.
Support comes from Northland Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center, information at 789-6780 or at northlandaudiology.com.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon. I'll be your host again tomorrow, and we'll get an update on Juneau's libraries. Meet a New York City firefighter who was buried alive twice on 9/11. Learn about summer opportunities for kids and teens at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. And meet Willy Wonka and all the Thunder Mountain High School Chocolate Factory characters tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon. The weather for tonight calls for rain. Lows around 40. Tomorrow, Tuesday, rain. Highs in the mid-40s. Wednesday, scattered rain showers. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy and clearing off towards Thursday. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon. We're listening to the Eroica Trio as one of Juneau Jazz and Classics featured guests. First time I can see them on the schedule looks like Monday, May 7th, a week from today. at the Alaskan Brewing Company for the Brew and Beethoven. That's another free concert. Thanks for tuning in to A Juno Afternoon. You can always listen to it or figure out how to get on the show at ktoo.org.